everyone. Welcome to another episode of Hashing Out the Law. I'm your host, Arash Hashemi. On this episode, my guest is Mr. Ethan Wall. Ethan is a founder of the social media law firm. He is a lawyer. He's also author of 7 books about how social media affect the practice of law. But instead of me taking up time and introducing everyone, I'm going to let Ethan tell us about his background and how he started. Hi, Ethan. How are you?
Hi, Ross. Thanks so much for having me today.
It's my pleasure. Now, Ethan, you are a lawyer and you founded the social media law firm. Could you tell us a little bit about how you founded or what inspired you to find the social media law firm and what it's exactly about, please?
Sure. I founded the social media law firm largely by mistake. When I began practicing in 2007, I was focusing on internet and intellectual property law. And a couple years after I began practicing, we hit that economic downturn around 2009, 2010. And I was on the board of directors for my law school, and they asked me to come in to speak about how lawyers can market their practice during an economic downturn. And so I talked about how you can use social media to promote yourself for free if you've got limited budget during this time. People in the audience were kind of enamored about social media for lawyers, began asking me to speak at different conferences on topics that related to social media and the law. And I found the topic really interesting. And so me and 6 other attorneys researched the effect of social media on the practice of law for over 450 law firms from across the world. We used this data to publish a book called The Social Media Guide for Lawyers. And everybody else on my research team said, hey, this is cool, but you take the ball and run with it. And so I just became very interested in how social media intersects with the practice of law and how it intersects with all different types of law, from intellectual property, contract law. You know, when our founding fathers drafted the Constitution, social media didn't exist at the time. And so I just found the topic to be really interesting. And I kept writing more books on the subject, speaking on it more often, and about 2014 and 7 years of practicing law for a truly wonderful law firm, we kind of came at a crossroads together where their firm was more traditional and didn't really get social media or that it was going to be around for a while. And they're like, Ethan, why don't you focus on real estate law instead? There's so many more buildings out there than there are social media profiles. And I just had a hunch that this was something that I found interesting. And so I set off on a journey to focus on social media exclusively. I had no idea what the social media law firm would ultimately look like. But in 2015, I opened up the world's first social media law firm, focusing on protecting and growing businesses online, seeing if instead of being a litigator and charging people by the hour to solve their problems, instead, I was going to use my research on social media and the law to be able to predict how the law is going to apply to many different types of situations in the social media realm and provide solutions to everything from trademarks, intellectual property, compliance, giveaways, influencer law, everything that touches upon social media itself. So that's really kind of how I got started by accident and what the social media law firm does in a nutshell.
That's very interesting, actually. I am involved in social media a lot, and I always wondered, you know, what the laws are if you want to have an influencer promoting you and stuff like that. So that's where your firm comes in. Your firm is there to help people that or law firms that want to use social media, and you're there to direct them on how they should do it to be not within just the laws of the community they're in, but ethical laws as well. Is that correct?
That's right. And really at the very beginning, you mentioned, you know, helping clients or helping lawyers. I came to that crossroads itself. When I left the traditional practice of law, I actually didn't want to be a lawyer anymore. I just wanted to teach and speak and write and serve as a consultant to both lawyers and the business community. But of course, the legal ethics rules were right staring in front of me saying, how can you do this? And I realized that in order to be able to do what I wanted to and how I wanted to be able to help people, I couldn't do it under one umbrella. Because if I ran everything through a law firm, then all of my marketing that I might do to help lawyers use social media would be governed by the legal advertising rules, and it would tie my hands a little bit. On the other hand, I couldn't consult with businesses with my specialty being the fact that I was a lawyer, because even though I'd be serving as a consultant, I would be having myself promoted as a lawyer, and that wouldn't be okay. So what I ultimately did was I created two companies. The first was the Social Media Law Firm, which is an actual law firm set up under the state of Florida that helps businesses with social media legal issues. And I created a separate company called Social Media Law and Order, which is a consulting and marketing company for lawyers to help them use social media in a way that can help accomplish either their marketing or their practice objectives, but be able to do so in a way that complies with the ethics rules. So yes, Ethan Wall himself both kind of helps lawyers and law firms on the one hand, and helps startups and small businesses and even large companies with unique social media legal issues. But they're done through different entities and different websites for exactly the reason that you had set forth, which is the ethics rules are there for a reason. And if I'm going to be consulting with people about ethical issues as they relate to social media, I know that I'm going to have the radar on me, and I want to make sure, or need to make sure, that I stay above board with the ethics rules as well.
That's very interesting. So that brings up a question for me. I know you created two different companies. One is a law firm and one is a marketing firm. And I know that from what you said, the rules of ethic responsibility for lawyers doesn't apply because it's a marketing firm. But even though you're still a lawyer and you are the marketing firm, because technically it's a marketing firm, it doesn't attach to you, the rules of ethics for lawyers?
So it depends. Okay. By and large, and I think the easiest example of when you have a lawyer doing non-lawyer business, and then we'll kind of bring it back into my example. Let's say that you opened up, well, I'm going to ask you, what's your favorite food?
Hamburgers.
Okay, you opened up a hamburger restaurant. Okay, and you have your law firm on the one hand, and you have a Rosh's hamburger stand on the other hand. I think it's pretty obvious to everybody out there that you are a lawyer, but you're running clearly a non-legal business, providing a non-legal service, unless you are located near Yale University and you're running the Educated Burger, which is a U.S. Supreme Court themed burger joint. But it's pretty obvious that the legal ethics rules wouldn't apply to your marketing or use of the hamburger joint. It seems pretty obvious. In this scenario, where I have a law firm on the one hand and a legal marketing agency on the other hand, there is a possibility that these things might blend or kind of be confused if the marketing agency was serving business clients, meaning if my client is an influencer marketing agency and I'm providing both legal advice in terms of the contracts and compliance with truth in advertising laws, and I'm also providing marketing services for them, that could be really confusing. And it could create a blur between the legal ethics rules in that company. And that's why I decided my marketing agency doesn't serve businesses at all. It only serves lawyers and usually solo and small law firms. And so for that company itself, I might be helping with email marketing campaigns, or creating social media content using the assets that they provide, or providing strategy for how they can use SEO or their website to attract more clients. And so in that way, that company only serves lawyers. And while I think there is a value proposition that people would want to work with my marketing agency because I am a lawyer and understand the legal ethics rules more than, let's say, a marketing company that you find, you know, locally and wherever it is that you live, you know, that company doesn't provide any legal services itself. And so I, Ethan Wall, I'm always governed by the legal ethics rules, regardless of what I do, but kind of just like the hamburger company, I make sure to separate the assets, the websites, the branding, the contracts, the bank accounts, everything between the two companies are separate, so that I'm always making sure I'm following the ethics rules, even if I'm doing marketing work. But I don't blend my marketing and consulting agency on issues of social media with any of my business or law firm type clients.
Makes perfect sense. Now, before we continue, I ask this question of all my guests who are attorneys. I know we talked about that moment where you decided you don't want to necessarily practice law anymore and you wanted to do what you do now. But let's go back in time a little bit. Tell me that moment that you decided that you wanted to be a lawyer. What was that moment that clicked in your head?
So I hate to be someone that repeats something, but it was another mistake, or at least it wasn't something that was on my mind at all. And the only reason I became a lawyer is because I failed at what I had really wanted to do in the first place. So I'll tell you what I mean. When I was in high school, I was in the television production class. So I was both behind the camera learning how to use the editing tools, but I was in front of the camera as well, doing, you know, the entertainment segment for the high school TV news. And so I said, this is great. I'm going to go to college for television and radio production. And while I really wanted to learn more about the TV production, where I became most popular was on the radio. I was living in a fraternity house. My fraternity brother stole my shoes one day as a joke, and I had to walk across campus barefoot, and I see a sign on the door that said UCF, my college, was having a new radio station, and they had signups today for a show. So I walked in, put my bare feet up on the table, and said, I'd like a radio show, please. And they're like, what are you going to talk about? And I said, I don't know, college stuff, partying, and you know what the kids are doing these days. And they're like, do you have any plan? Do you have anything prepared? I said, nope. And they said, well, thanks very much. And I went off to my class barefoot. I then get an email saying that not enough people signed up to have a radio show, so we have to give you one, but we're going to give you the absolute worst time slot, Friday mornings at 11 o'clock. Like, people are already at work. People are like not at lunch yet. Like, no one's going to listen to your show, but we have to give it to you anyway. Turns out that all of the Greek students, the fraternities and sororities, had their Greek nights on Thursday, so they never had classes on Friday mornings. And so I would take my pledges, like the people who are being recruited into my law firm, to go to all the fraternity and sorority houses and turn their radios and TVs on Friday morning so that they could listen to the show. And it turned out to be such a wildly popular show that they moved me to prime time, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. My own co-host, my own interns, the Ethan Wall Show, became one of the largest shows at the university at that time. And as part of doing the radio television class, I had taken a mass communication law class where they talked about how people like George Carlin, the comedian, said the 7 dirty words you can't say on TV and how, or the radio, and how he took that all the way up to the US Supreme Court. And he got the law changed based upon him just putting his foot down and saying, like, no, I'm an adult. I should be able to say bad words. And just because there are kids out there doesn't mean I can't do that. And I thought that was so interesting. So it turns out I got kicked off the radio because I had content that was too much of pushing the envelope at the time. And the dean was listening and he's like, what is this guy doing on the radio? And they kicked me off and they wouldn't let me as a senior finish the radio and television program. I sat there like, man, this might be the first time in my life that someone has told me I can't do something. You know, no matter how hard I worked at it or how outside the box that I thought I was doing to be successful at being on the radio and being in television, the university said, we're not going to let you finish the program. And they blamed it on my grades, but really it's because I ruffled people's feathers. And I remembered that mass communication law class. And I remember George Carlin saying, like, oh, you're telling me I can't do this? Let me show you. And I took the same mindset and I said, okay, I'm not going to be on radio TV anymore. I'm just going to go pivot to legal studies and the law. And I remember there was a mock trial competition and I walked into the competition without preparing. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to compete tomorrow. What do I need to do? And I stayed up all night and read all of the briefs and came in and made it onto the mock trial team. Went to Yale University to represent the university in mock trial. Ended up graduating with honors in the major, not overall, but having a 3.98 GPA in legal studies. And I realized, wait a minute, maybe I'm good at this. And I remember walking into my advisor's office, and I know that you told me before the show that it's okay to get into controversial racy topics. And I looked at my advisor. This is probably immature, but I said, F you, I'm going to law school now. Like, thanks for the rejection. I'm going to go do something better. And I went to law school and I practiced law for those 7 years. And at that point at 2015, when I ended up leaving the firm, right, I remember asking myself at one point, how did I get here? How did I become a lawyer in the first place? And I realized it was because someone told me I couldn't do what I really wanted, and I wanted to prove them and show them up. And that fast forwarded to 10 years of my life going to law school and then becoming a lawyer and realizing, wait a minute, what is it that I really wanted out of life? And that was both having that leverage of social media law with finally checking back in with myself and realizing that our time in life is short. We don't know how much time we have. Like, what do I want to do with my life? And that's how I was able to pivot the traditional practice of law into the practice that I have now, because I realized I can take that background as a lawyer and my interest in social media and create something new and unique and something that I was really good at, as opposed to continuing down the path of being a more traditional lawyer, which was great for many people, but just wasn't great for me. So I kind of became a lawyer again, almost by accident, and then pivoted into this direction once I realized, wait a minute, I never wanted to be a lawyer in the first place. How can I use the skills and knowledge that I've learned and use it in a way that aligns with my strengths and what I enjoy most in life?
That's a great story. Maybe it wasn't an accident. Maybe it was destiny and you were supposed to end up where you are and take that path. But thanks to the dean to kicking you off that show. Now he puts you where you're supposed to be. Now that you have, looking for the right word, mastered social media and the law, tell me an interesting fact or interesting story about how social media has affected the law, in particular the practice of law, or another area that you think is important.
Oh, sure. I mean, first of all, thank you for calling me a master in social media law. That was the nicest thing anybody has ever said to me. I'm not, from an ethics standpoint, I can't endorse being a master of it, but it is something that I really do love. What I really love about this area of law and how it changes both the practice of law and changes both the state of kind of the universe at the moment is that we're in this unique time in history where technology is advancing so much faster than the law can adapt, that we as lawyers or the legal system itself is constantly playing catch up. And this is whether or not you are a lawyer listening to this podcast and saying, how should I use social media or how should I use AI? But there's no ethics rules out there to give me precedent. So as lawyers, we kind of sit in our hands and wait until there's some sort of clear direction as to what we should do and what we shouldn't do, because we don't want to inadvertently violate the ethics rules. And so there are so many times through my career and through the career of so many other lawyers that we want to innovate and we want to take advantage of these really cool technologies that are there, but there's no clear rules or guidelines on what we can or can't do. And we're risk adverse, most of us by nature. I think the same thing happens with businesses all the time. And you mentioned influencer laws. Let's just roll with that one. Influencers are such a major business right now. People are just becoming content creators for a living and creating content and photos and videos that are entertaining. And brands are paying them hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars to create this content. But the law is still trying to catch up in a way as to how do existing laws such as the FTC or the Federal Trade Commission's truth in advertising laws apply to influencers. And even though they now have a firm law in place and have fined and created press releases in certain instances, fining people like Kim Kardashian $1.25 million for violating influencer laws for promoting Bitcoin on her accounts, they still have yet to catch up to how they're going to enforce this against everyone. And so businesses are even operating in an environment where it's like, we know there's a law, but we don't know how it's going to be enforced. And businesses, unlike lawyers, are willing to push forward more often to despite the risks, because the likelihood of them getting caught maybe is low. And the consequences are unclear, where with lawyers, we know if we violate the rules, we can lose our license to practice law. And so it's much more of a deterrent. So I would say that whether you are a lawyer or whether you are a business, we are existing in the universe in such a unique time in history where technology just keeps moving so fast. And by the time our legislatures or our ethics boards have meetings and come up with guidelines, advisory opinions, rules, or law, the law or the rules itself or the technology has modified so many new times that the issue is completely changed and a horde of new issues are there. And so that's really what is both challenging and really exciting about being in the realm of social media, is that unlike criminal law, it's probably been the same for a long time and only has changes as new case laws come out. Social media is changing and adapting by the minute. And that makes it really challenging on the one hand to try to stay ahead of these things and predict what's going to happen, but it's also really exciting and really fun.
I can imagine. Let me ask you this. Is there different ethics regulations and laws in different jurisdictions? Like, does one state come up with one for social media and another state come up with contradictory law?
They do. And it's just like, I say the best analogy is thinking about different states or different federal circuits passing different laws on the same issues. And so you might have, for example, there are one of the reasons that cases get up to the Supreme Court is that there's a split between the federal circuits. The 11th Circuit and the 5th Circuit come with different conflicting opinions on the same issue, and it needs to be resolved. And because the Supreme Court has such a slow cycle for cases to get there, this unresolved issue might take a year or two until we get clarity from the U.S. Supreme Court. And the same thing happens with lawyers and the ethics rules. And so I'll give you an example. One of the real popular strategies on social media nowadays is running online giveaways, like my post for a chance to win a prize and we'll pick somebody at random. And this is really effective. People want to engage with your content because they want a chance to win free stuff. And so there are gaming laws out there that apply from a legal standpoint, but a question arises as to whether lawyers ethically can run these online giveaways. Because we don't have a specific ethics rule on the subject, but we do have a rule that says that when it comes to providing online reviews or testimonials for a lawyer, you can't ask for those in return for something of value. I can't pay somebody $20 to leave me a 5-star review on Google because that would violate the ethics rules. And so one state has released an advisory ethics opinion saying that lawyers should not run online giveaways because you are giving something of value in return for people potentially endorsing you, such as liking your post on social media. And let's just say for hypothetical purposes that that ethics opinion came out of North Carolina. Well, now you are an attorney in California and you want to know whether you should run online giveaways or not. There's no ethics rules in California. There's only one ethics rule in a different state, but one, it's not a binding rule in that state. It's only an advisory ethics opinion. And it's certainly one that doesn't govern you. And so lawyers now have to make a choice. And that choice is, do I want to say this is the only guidance that exists, and I believe that a practical application of that advisory opinion in a different jurisdiction would also apply to me? Or are they going to say, it's not a binding rule, it's not on me, and more often than not, the ethics board in California rules differently than other states across the country, and so I don't have confidence that it's going to apply to me. And up until there's clear rules or guidelines saying I can't do this, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And as lawyers, that decision of what we do is always up to us. We're left with our own internal guideline and compass of, you know, what's black and white and what's a gray area and how much do I want to be able to push? And we have to come up with those decisions to ourselves. And there are attorneys out there who have said, I'm going to blatantly violate this ethics rule from a marketing perspective because I believe it infringes upon my First Amendment rights. And I'm willing to take this to get clarity and change these ethics rules because I think they're infringing upon my rights to be able to do so. And there are other attorneys that might say, look, giveaways are great, but I don't want to take that risk. And both attorneys have to be able to make that kind of decision for themselves. But yes, just like changes or splits in the law between different states, there is not uniform ethics rules by and large across the country. And until the ABA sets a rule that the states are then willing to adopt, you kind of live in this gray area where there may not be clear answers to ethical questions or legal questions in this realm.
So it's like the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
Do you think the ABA is going to come up with general rules for social media and attorneys pretty soon? Or do you think it's something that's going to go back and forth and it's going to take a while?
So they will be, they are, and they have. So the ABA has released different types of guidance as it relates to social media. And one example of this, well, I'll give you a couple examples. One of it might be, you know, creating social media profiles for the purposes of collecting evidence in your cases and whether those violate different types of rules. And usually what the ABA might do is take a look at the different states' conflicting advisory ethics opinions, take these into account and release their own. I would say one of the most clear and recent ones is whether attorneys have the ability to practice their own state's law from living in other places through the use of technology like Zoom or otherwise. And during the pandemic, this was a big issue. Some states were closed, some states were open. Attorneys in Florida got a cabin in the woods in Wyoming and wanted to practice law there, but wanted to seek clarity about whether they were violating the ethics rules. And the ABA did come out with an opinion that said you can practice your state's law from another location so long as you comply with all of the ethics rules that would otherwise apply, such as you don't say that you have offices in Wyoming, you don't advertise in Wyoming, you don't hold out an office in Wyoming and market to people. But if you're just living in a cabin somewhere, but you're practicing your own state's law, that's going to be okay. So I think part of the ABA's responsibilities are to help both advocate for legal issues on behalf of its membership, which is many of the lawyers in the country, but at the same time, also try to the extent possible to prepare these ethics opinions in a way that help. And I think that both the ABA, legislatures, and our state ethics opinions are unfortunately playing a game of whack-a-mole, which is, you know, by the time they release an opinion on one issue, three more issues have popped back up or things have changed. So it is both a challenging job that our legislatures, our state boards, and the ABA has. But I think we can't also be an ostrich and stick our head in the sand and say, just because it's hard and complicated and things change, that we're going to do nothing. But I do think that this results in opinions coming out very slowly because there are new factors to take into consideration all the time as these technology and online tools continue to evolve.
Makes sense. Now, Ethan, if I am a attorney and I need to get a hold of you, how do I do that? Where do I find you?
Sure. If you're a lawyer and you just want to get a hold of Ethan Wall, you can just find me by Googling Ethan Wall online. But if you are looking for help as a lawyer in marketing on social media or learning about how the ethics rules might apply to your use of social media, you can visit our site, socialmedialawandorder.com. And of course, if you're a business and you want to learn about what we do to help protect and grow businesses online, you can find us at thesocialmedialawfirm.com. And again, you can search on any of the social media sites for Social Media Law and Order or the Social Media Law Firm or just Ethan Wall and find us there as well.
All right. And for all the listeners and viewers, we're going to make sure to include Ethan's links in the comments section or in the description section, depending on the platform you're watching. Ethan, I know you wrote 7 books. Are those books available for purchase? And if they are, where can I get them?
Sure. So we're actually going to make many of these books available for free download. And you can visit ethanwall.com. We are opening up a new page that's going to aggregate all the different books and have many of these downloaded for free. And if you want to learn more about the effect of social media on the law as well, but not read the entire book, we do have a podcast as well called the Social Media Lawcast. And on that podcast, we discuss a lot of the late breaking issues with social media and the law, including ones that you mentioned like AI and how that's affecting the law as well.
Awesome. This is a very interesting subject. And usually when I have guests on, it's because of my own selfish reasons, because I want to learn something new. I learned a lot from you. I could pick your brain all day, but I know you're a busy man. I thank you for coming on. Before we sign off, is there anything else you'd like to say or leave the viewers and listeners with?
All I would just say is that our time in life is short and we don't know how much time we have. So to spend your time doing things that you love and enjoy in life is paramount. And the fact that you took this half an hour to listen to the Hashing Out the Law podcast with us means a lot to me personally. I know it means a lot to you. So thank you for listening. And Arash, thank you so very much for inviting me on the show. It's been an absolute gift and pleasure to be your guest.
Thank you, Ethan. It was a pleasure speaking to you. I hope to speak to you sooner than later.